Tape is on. Perek Tes. What page is that?
76.
So just as a little bit of an overview of what this chapter is going to be dealing with, the chapter is going to be dealing with a story. The background of the story for the chapter is something that we've discussed many, many times, is that we're in the middle of Bayis Rishon, of the first Beis HaMikdash, where the king, there's a divided kingdom. The northern part of Eretz Yisrael, like 75% of Eretz Yisrael, is under Malchus Yehuda, Malchus Yisrael, I mean. And that's called the northern kingdom. And that kingdom had already, from a while already, had been, was Avodah Zarah, and all kinds of bad things were prevalent. And their kings were not good kings. On the rest of Eretz Yisrael, the southern kingdom, which is called Malchus Yehuda, was under, from different times, was under different types of kings. In this particular story, was under the kingdom of a king, Ochaz. And Ochaz was a bad person. Ochaz had a son, and his son was Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu was a good person. Chizkiyahu was such a good person that the Gemara says, then we'll talk about it later, that Chizkiyahu could have been Mashiach. He could have been Mashiach, but they messed up at that time. So what's happening in this particular case, is that there's a kingdom of Ashur. Ashur was the kingdom of Assyria. And the kingdom of Assyria was ruled by Sanherib. The kingdom of Assyria was ruled by Sanherib. Sanherib became a world power. And Assyria became a world power. And they had begun to seize all kinds of countries around them in the Middle East. And they began to fight against the kingdom, first against the kingdom of Yisrael, of the northern kingdom. By this point, and we're learning in this chapter, most of the kingdom of the northern kingdom of Yisrael had been completely destroyed. And what they did was they exiled all of the inhabitants. They didn't allow the people of Yisrael to stay there. That's the famous story, the lost ten tribes. The lost 10 tribes was from the devastation of Sanherib. That Sanherib came in and he destroyed most of the Eretz Yisrael. This is like 150 or 200 years before the actual destruction of the temple. But by that time, even 150 years before the destruction of the first temple, most of Eretz Yisrael was already emptied out. They emptied out their inhabitants, they moved their own people in, and now, in this part of the story, Sanherib and his huge, huge army has begun to siege Yerushalayim. So they already incurred and went into the part of Eretz Yisrael that was Yehuda, and now they have begun to circle Yerushalayim with these tremendous, tremendous forces. Last time we learned that there were people within the camp of Yerushalayim that wanted to go out and wanted to make a treaty with Sanherib, and that didn't work out. So they're all camped around Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim looks out its window and over its walls, and all they see is this huge, huge army, which under normal circumstances, that army would have been able to literally overrun them. Very easily would have been able to destroy all of Eretz Yisrael, all of Yerushalayim, and the Beis HaMikdash. And that was the prospect that they were looking at. Yeshayahu HaNavi is in Yerushalayim, and he's prophesizing and telling Ochaz, it's not a problem. You have nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. We have hundreds of thousands of soldiers out there ready to rip us apart. And Yeshayahu says, we have nothing to worry about. So that's the scene, and what happens is that on the night before they were going to go and try to capture Yerushalayim the next morning, and in the middle of the night, hundreds of thousands of soldiers dropped dead in their beds. They woke up in the morning, Sanherib's army woke up in the morning, and they were just, literally, without a fight, just miraculously, they had all dropped. Most of them had dropped dead. The rest of them got up and they ran away, and Yerushalayim was saved. Later on, it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, but that's much, much later in the history. But that's what happened at this time. So that's the setting of the opening pasuk of this chapter. Ha'om is telling the people, Ha'holchem b'choshech. The people were walking in darkness, because to them it all looked dark and doom and gloom. Ro'u or godol. They saw immediately when Sancheirov's army were defeated, they saw this great, great light. Yoishvei b'oretz tzalmoves. The people that were sitting in the land of the shadow of death. Tzalmoves is a two word. Tzal, moves, the shadow of death. Or noga lohem. A tremendous light shone upon them. So it's telling us that from one second, you know, the Chofetz Chaim uses this pasuk, and he tells us that in 1 second things change. You know, generally, when you make a moshel of light and darkness, it's like the sun rising. When the sun rises at night, when the sun comes up at night, so first there's twilight. First there's a little bit of a light, and then the light gets stronger, light gets stronger, light gets stronger and stronger and stronger until the light is 100% strong. Here, that's not the way that the Jewish people were saved in the time of Sancheirov in our chapter. It happened literally, 1 second was dark, and the next second it was light. Says the Chofetz Chaim, similarly is going to be our salvation when Mashiach comes. That it's not going to go slowly. We're not going to have little victories. We're not going to have little things happen to us to show us the light. We're going to go from complete darkness, and all of a sudden, it's going to be completely light. That's what he explains. So, Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky, you know, there's a pasuk that we say always, that we never, I never thought about it in this terms, but we say in Bereishis, Vayar Hashem Esor Ki Toiv, Vayavdel Alekim Ben Aor Ben Achoshech. And really, when you think about it, I never thought about it this way, the pasuk really doesn't make sense. Because what does it mean? Vayar Hashem Esor Ki Toiv. What does that mean? God saw the light that it was good. So what did he do? Vayavdel Alekim Ben Aor Ben Achoshech. So he separated between light and darkness. How does that sentence make sense? He saw the light that it was good, and therefore he separated the light and the darkness. What does the fact that he saw the light that it was good have to do with separating the light from the darkness?
Because darkness wasn't good.
No, the light was good, so they make it light. Make it only light. If you see the light is good, so who needs darkness? Just make it light. And what, you mean, you separate?
I mean, good, in a sense, good is a contrast.
Says Rabbi
Cheskel. You don't know what's good if you don't know what you're comparing it.
Very good. Says Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky, when God saw the light and he said how good it was, he said that if all you're going to have is light, what's going to happen? Light can be great, but eventually you don't appreciate it anymore. Because something good that you always have, it loses its feeling of goodness for it, because you always have it. So when God saw the earth that it was good, so you know what he did? I want you to keep continuously appreciating it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave light and darkness in order that we should be able to appreciate it. It says, that's what we say by Havdalah. By Havdalah we say that Hamavdol Ben Or L'Choshech, right? We say Hamavdol Ben Or, what were we say Havdalah? Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol is the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated Ben Yom HaShvi L'Sheshes Yimei HaMasim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a separation between the 6 days a week of work and the seventh day, which is Shabbos. Why? In order for us to be able to appreciate Shabbos, you have to go through what? 6 days of work. When you're working hard for 6 days, and then comes Shabbos, so automatically you appreciate Shabbos. So the whole concept of Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol, Ben Or L'chosh, Ben Yisrael L'amim is the same thing. That when we contrast ourselves with the rest of the world, with the non-Jewish world, we begin to appreciate the heritage and everything else that we have. That's what the pasuk says, in Ein Das Havdolo Minayin. Without Das, without a really Das, you can't come to understanding of Havdolah. And that's what it says here, that concept is said here, Ha'om ha'holchem b'choshech ro'u or gadol. That there was such darkness that they were able to appreciate the or gadol that came there. You know, that concept of, you know, education, really the root and understanding of what education is the power to compare. That if to be able to compare one thing to the other thing, everything about education is comparison. When you're reading, you're comparing one letter to the next letter. If a person does not have the ability to compare, then you have no ability to be educated. That ability to compare is called bina. There's chokhmah, which is wisdom. There's das, which is intellect. And then there's bina. We say in davening, that ato chinein la'odam das u'malamed la'enosh bina. So das is just our own level of intelligence. Chokhmah is acquired wisdom. Bina, what's bina?
Understand.
Bina is
understand.
What?
Understanding.
It's more than understanding. It's the ability to compare. It's the ability to compare. That's what bina is, and that's why we say in davening, ato chinein la'odam das means what? God gives us a gift of das. Das is a gift. Umelamed, and he teaches to a person how to have bina. God can't give you bina. So we say in davening, ato chinein la'odam das. God can give you das. God can give you a good brain. And God can give you a brain to understand. But bina, HaKadosh Baruch, God can't give you bina. The ability to compare is very, very much different than chokhmah and das, and that's bina. That's what the Gemara in Nida says, Vayiven Hashem alekim es hatzela, that God created a woman from, it says, from a rib, and the term is vayiven. Vayiven means what? That he built them. The Gemara says, Shenosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu bina yisera b'isha yosemi b'ish. That bina was given more to a woman has more bina than a man has. You agree?
Well, she thinks she has more of all three of them.
that ability to compare is and make comparisons between one another, and then to be able to differentiate between Or L'Choshech and Ben Kodesh L'Chol is the understanding of bina. Pasuk Beis. Hirbisa Hagoy, you went ahead, and the nation of Israel, after this destruction of the armies of Sennacherib, Hirbisa Hagoy, you made them great. The nation of Israel became great. Loi Higdalto Hasimcha, you magnified the joy for them. Somchu Lefanecha, they rejoiced for you. When this thing happened with Sennacherib being trashed, they rejoiced with you, kesimchas bakotzer, like the simcha that they, like a farmer has in the joy of harvest, kasha yogilu bechalkam shalom, as they rejoice when they would divide the spoils of war. When they woke up the next morning and Sennacherib's army were in a full retreat, that a tremendous amount of simcha of happiness. Their happiness was like the happiness of the cutting of the joy of harvest and the joy when they divide the spoils of war. When you divide the spoils of war, says the Malbim, even though you're happy, but that's only after a fight and after a lot of blood has been spilled. The joy of harvest is a joy where there's no blood is spilled. Here, they had a double joy. They got the spoils of war, but they got the spoils of war without shooting a single arrow, without losing a single battle, without anybody of them dying. So, what's interesting, just in terms of the word, the wording here.
Did they recognize that all their friends did it, or they were such a bad place already that they didn't?
The Jews recognized, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. Because even though that side of the Eretz Yisrael saw,
the people in Yehuda, there were a lot of people that were still, and they also had the prophecy of Yeshayahu that told them that they're going to miraculously they're going to be saved. But when they saw such a miracle, even the non-believers, now the Zara people, automatically understood that this was from God.
They also dropped leaflets.
If you look in the first,
this is not very God.
This is me, right? The first pasuk, if you look at the first pasuk, the people were called Ha'am, right? The nation. In the second pasuk, it says Hirbisa Hagoy. And Goy is also a nation. The two words that we use for calling ourselves a nation. Sometimes we call ourselves an Am, and sometimes we call ourselves a Goy. Goy does not mean what we're Gentile, but the word Goy means a nation. They're both interchangeable for the word nation. And Reb Shamshon Rafal Hirsch explains that the word comes from the word im. Im means together. We call ourselves an for our relationship with each other. We call ourselves a Goy in relationship to ourselves, to the outside world. With our relationship with the outside world, we're called a goy. To our relationship with ourselves, we're called an which comes from the word im, which is together. Because that's what a nation is supposed to be. A nation is supposed to be one unit. So therefore, in the first pasuk, we're talking about ourselves, that the was holchem b'choshech. Here we're talking about herbesa ha-goy in relationship to the rest of the world. So here we're calling ourselves with the word a goy. So over here they're rejoicing. The Mefarshim tell us that the rejoicing of the people, there's two ways, there are two times when a person rejoices. You're happy when you acquire something new. You acquire something new, you become very happy. There's a certain sense of happiness. You make a chasna, you make a bar mitzvah. There's something visible that you have done. You've reached another level in life. You've bought something. You've acquired something. You did a deal, and you rejoice on that deal. You're also rejoicing when you are saved from danger. There was a potential danger. You could have potentially lost something, and you don't lose it. So then again, you go ahead and you rejoice in that time. So generally, people rejoice. There's more of a visible rejoicing when you acquire something. Everybody understands why you're rejoicing. They see what you're rejoicing in. But very often when you're saved from danger, the only one that knows that is yourself. So over here, they were saved from danger. So therefore, they were saying that Herbisa Hagoy Loi Higdalta Hasimcha. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu is where we will magdal the simcha. We made that simcha greater for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you look in the pasuk, there's a kri and ksiv. Brian, there's... If you look...
Here, you could take this. I'll share with my husband.
If you look at the pasuk, there's a kri and ksiv. You see the words.
About him.
Right. Okay, we got out about Kaira, so he knows about
came
there
by a place.
If you look at pasuk base, show him pasuk base. Herbesa hagoy loy higdalta. You see the loy? So we read it loy to him with the vav. And it also says what? Loy with an aleph, right?
Yeah.
So it says loy with an aleph, which means no. Two different words. It's written in the parchment. It's written lamed aleph, which means no. We read it lamed vav, which means to him. It's very two distinct and very different and very different meanings. So the chidah says what it's saying is as follows. You have to read it as follows. Herbisa hagoy. That you went ahead and you made the nation of the Jewish people great, loy, not for himself. God didn't do it for himself. He did it for us. Loy, higdalta hasimcha. You didn't do it for HaKadosh, for yourself, God. You did it for as a favor for us. What's interesting is a pasuk in Tillim. The pasuk in Tillim says, "Du no, ki Hashem hu elikim, that God is our God, hu asanu, he made us, v'loy anachnu amoy," which we read, "v'loy anachnu," and to him we are his nation, "b'tzayim marisai," and his sheep. That's the pasuk. So the pasuk says, "Du ki Hashem hu elikim, hu asanu, v'loy anachnu amoy," to him we are his nation. Over there also there's a creek sieve, and v'loy anachnu is also loy with an aleph. The Chaya Odom and others say that that's an allusion to Elam. Loy, lamed aleph, this means no, and loy, lamed vav, which is to him, together, put the letters together, and you have the word El. Now that pasuk is an allusion to Elul, that v'loy, loy, hu asano v'loy anachnu, he made us and not us, we are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is a remes to Chodesh El. And the Svasema says the reason why it's a remes to Chodesh El, because the pasuk says, loy, you could read it, loy anachnu, we are nothing, or loy anachnu, to him, we are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more that you put yourself down, and more that you have less faith in yourself, the more we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu favors us. Pasuk Gimel. Ki es oil suboloi. For the yoke of his burden, the yoke of Sancheriv. Sancheriv was a yoke around our neck. Ki oil suboloi. Ve es mato shichmoi. And the staff that was on our shoulders. Shevet hanoigeis boi. The rod that he oppressed us with. Hachitoisa. You broke it. Ki yoim midyoin. Like the day of Midyan. So you went ahead, and Sancheriv, that was so strong against us, that was so strong over us, you went ahead and you destroyed Sancheriv. Ki kol so'ein so'ein. Because for all battles are tumultuous with noise, ki kol so'ein so'ein barash. Every other battle, when you fight a battle, there's usually a lot of noise, there's a lot of commotion, there's a lot of blood, there's a lot of shooting, there's a lot of noise. Here there was no noise. There wasn't a single shot fired, and Sancheriv's army were all dead. Ki kol so'ein so'ein barash, v'simla megoilola bedomim, and clothing is soaked in blood. V'hoysa l'sreifes macholas esh, but this, they were like burnt, like consumed with fire. There was no shots fired, there was no noise, everything happened and very, very, very quickly, everything happened without a single shot, without a single anything happening, without any noise. So, the Gemara darshes from here. It says, "Ki ko'ol so'ein so'ein," which means that for every so'ein, for every noise, generally, there's an accompanying noise from the other side. For every patch, there's usually another patch that's given back. And the Gemara darshens from here, something that the Gemara talks about in many places, that when God punishes someone, the words that we use is generally, it's mida keneged mida. Mida keneged mida means it's measure for measure. Generally, the way that you did your Avera is the way that you're going to be punished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu usually does that in order for you to understand that you're being punished for something that you did wrong. If a guy did something wrong with his hand, let's say, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish him in his hand, for him to understand that it was his hand that got him into trouble. Ki kol sa'ayin, there's an accompaniment of another sa'ayin. That's called, that what the Medrash says, that when Moshe Rabbeinu said, that when he wanted to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. What does Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh means? I literally translate it means I will be what I will be. But that's not what it means. That's sarcastic. I'll be whatever I'll be. Ehyeh asher ehyeh means I will be to you. God generally relates himself to people the same way that people relate themselves to him. The way that you relate to God is the way that God is going to relate himself to you, which is the same concept of mida keneged mida. The Baal Shem Tov says, we say a pasuk, Hashem tzilcha, God is your shadow. What does it mean, God is your shadow? When you're walking in the street and you have a shadow, and you pick up your hand, your shadow picks up his hand also. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know how I'm going to treat you? I'm going to treat you the same way that you treat me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you have, someone is bothering you, someone, you don't like something that someone says, someone says something to you that you didn't like, if you can go ahead, if you get angry at that person for saying that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when you say something to me that I don't like, I'm going to get angry at you for saying that. But if you, someone says something, someone insults you, and you can hold back your anger and not get insulted by something that someone said to you, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when you insult me, I'm not going to get angry because you insulted me. The Gemara says that one of the greatest things that you can do for Yom Kippur, Shana Yom Kippur, in order to find favor in God's eyes, is a person should be Oyver Al Midoysav. Oyver Al Midoysav means is to go beyond being nice. If you can be nice to people, in fact, if you can be nice to people that don't deserve that you should help them. If you can go ahead and help someone that doesn't deserve to be helped, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what I'm going to do? You don't deserve to be helped either. You're going to dive into me, and you're going to come with all your list or your laundry list of things that you want me to give it to you. But you don't deserve it. I have a right to be angry at you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let's see how you're going to act. If you can go ahead and forgive someone else that did something wrong to you, mida keneged mida. If you can forgive, someone really hurt you, and he deserves that you should be angry at him. If you can go ahead and be nice to that person, now Kodesh Baruch says, you know what? I really should be angry at you. But if you can get over with somebody else's thing, I'll get over mine. And that's Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. I'm going to treat you the way that you treat me or the way that you treat other people. And that the Chofetz Chaim and others talk very, very much that by our actions on this world, we change the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts towards us. That's why you see so many Maimari Chazal that talk about the importance of doing chesed, of helping people. When you help people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll help you. You helped other people, I'm also going to help you. You opened your hand for other people, I'm going to open my hand for you as well. Because that's the concept that in truth, none of us have a right to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for anything. We did so many things wrong, none of us have a right to ask him for anything. The only way that we can tell him that we should get something that we don't deserve is to say to him that I've done things to other people that and they didn't deserve it, and they didn't deserve it either. That's also a concept of a person. The Chovetz Chaim has a concept. It says, as aveloi, beliboy v'tzalosoy b'fonav. That if a person is hurting, he should keep his hurt inside, and he should, on the outside, he should be happy. That if a person portrays himself without having tainus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without having any questions HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu repays him in the same way as unquestionably helping that person as well. Pasuk Hey. So the Pasuk now talks about the birth of Chizkiyo HaMelech. Chizkiyo HaMelech was the son of Ochaz. Ochaz was a particularly bad king over Yehuda. And Chizkiyo came, and Chizkiyo was one of the greatest kings, was definitely one of the greatest kings for Shlomo HaMelech. And in fact, the Gemara says he fought against Sancheriv also, and he destroyed Sancheriv. That fight could have been the fight of Goyg u'Magoy, the ultimate fight, and Chizkiyo could have been Mashiach. Interesting, the Gemara says the reason what he lost the opportunity to be Mashiach is because after that fight, he didn't thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu made the Shira, and other people in Tanakh made songs after they had after HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them, Chizkiyahu never thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, never sang a song, and never said Halal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving him from Sancheriv, and because of that, he lost the opportunity to become Mashiach. So the pasuk says, Ki yeled yulad lanu. A child has already been born to us. Bein niten lanu. A son was given to us. Vatehi hamisra al shechmai. And the authority will be upon his shoulders. Vayikra shemai. You're going to call his name. His name actually was Chizkia. But they called him Pella. Pella means a wondrous Pella Yoetz, a wondrous advisor, Kel Gibor, the mighty God, Aviad Sar Sholoim. Aviad means the everlasting. Aviad is a conjugation of two words, Ovi and Ad, an everlasting father, Sar Sholoim, called his name. They called him the Prince of Peace. Now, Chizkiyahu was called the Prince of Peace. That this child that's going to be born, he's going to take Hamisra al Shechmai. He's going to take the authority on his shoulders. He's going to be the authority. The Gemara says that Chizkiyahu went and he made people start learning Torah again. To the point it says that when he went Midon Bar Beersheba, he went all across the country and everybody became well learned. People had stopped learning, people had stopped observing, and Chizkiyahu reinstituted all of those things. But Yikra Shemai, they called him Pella. It was a wondrous thing that he was able to do. He was a Yoetz. He was a person that people came for counsel. He was a Kel Gibor. He was strong. He was a strong ruler. He was an Ovi. He was like a father to the people. Avi Ad forever. And he was Sar Sholom. He was the Prince of Peace.
It's a strange, they call him Kel Gibor, which really means like a strong, mighty God. And right. To use that phraseology by the mortal person.
So the Mefarshim tell us the reason is that we find a similar thing in Mishpatim, that the judges are called Elohim. Vayavi Mishpatan Elohim. A judge, a person who judges, is sometimes called Elohim, which also means like a master. So Kel Gibor is referring to Chizkiyahu as besides a melech, often most melachim were besides kings, they were judges. And people came to them for judgment. It wasn't like the king of today. So he was a Kel Gibor, he was a strong judge. That's the Kel over here, that strong judge. So yes, they weren't referring to him as God, but they're referring to him as God in that context as a judge. Pasuk Vav, Lamarbe Hamisra. Lamarbe Hamisra, he increased his authority. If you notice the word Marbe, you see the word Marbe? It's not a mem, it's a final mem. Right? It's a mem sofit. So the Mefarshim tell us that it was a mem sofit because we're talking about Chizkiyahu, who was supposed to be Mashiach. Instead, it was enclosed. His powers were never let out. So a mem sofit does not have any, there's no openings in a final mem, in an end of mem. So it's lamar be hamisra, as he increased his authority, ulishalom ein kates. For the peace that he instituted, there was no end. Al kisei David, he sat on the throne of David, va'al mamlachtai, and on his kingdom. Lohochin oisa, to establish it, ulisada, and to establish it b'mishpat ubitzdaka. A very big theme of Malchus Beis David, of true kingdom, is that they do mishpat and tzedaka. Two very different things. Mishpat means judgment, tzedaka means righteousness. There's two very distinct things. There's mishpat and there is tzedaka. A true king and a true judge has to do both. And earlier, Rav Shimon Schwab explained the difference between mishpat and tzedakah. Mishpat would be like this. A guy's a landlord, and he's charging his tenant $1,000 a month to rent an apartment. The tenant has not paid for 6 months. Mishpat says what? Evict them. You owe me money. You can't pay me. Mishpat says evict them. Tzedakah says, let's see if we can make a payment plan and we can help you stay in the apartment and you can pay back the money that you owe over time and we can keep you in that apartment. So there's Mishpat. Mishpat is strict judgment. Strict judgment says, get rid of him, evict him, and you have that right to do that, according to Halacha. Tzedakah says, there's something else. The king of Yisrael, as a Jewish king, he had to temper Mishpat and Tzedakah. Tzedakah is unmitigated justice. Is mitigated justice is Mishpat, and unmitigated justice is Tzedakah. The other way, right?
Yeah.
Right, that's correct. Mitigated justice is tzedakah. Unmitigated justice is mishpat. They're told to do b'mishpat u'b'tzedakah me'ata v'ad olam, from now and forever. Kinas Hashem tzevokos tasu zois. You should do it with kinas Hashem tzevokos, with the concept of kinah generally means is revenge or zealousness. Kinas Hashem tzevokos tasu zois is the way that you should do this. That's why charity is called tzedakah, because you don't really. I worked for money. I worked for my money, and now you want me to give it away. And why should I give it away? It's money that I earn. So therefore, that's giving away money that you earn to somebody else is called that tzedakah. Right. So. Right. So Rosh Hashanah for Hirsch is an interesting thing. We talk about, often we talk about kinas Hashem. The word kina means either jealousy or it means zealousness or revenge. The word kina, kuf nun aleph hey, has a lot of different meanings. So Rosh Hashanah for Hirsch says that the root of kina is kuf nun hey, which means to be koina, to own something, is to own something. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, the word kina, when you own something, you're koina something. You make a kinyan, and it becomes yours. A person who's jealous believes that what you have belongs to me. That really I deserve to have what you have, and therefore I'm jealous of what you have. So the word kina as zealousness means is that you're kind of something, is that kinas Hashem here means not the zealousness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but kinas Hashem is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to acquire us and wants to be with us and wants us to be his kinyan, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu does all of these things.